The difference between open proprietary and open source software is about ownership. In this case, ownership means controlled copyright and any necessary distribution rights. Now, traditional software companies own the copyrights to all the software they distribute. Now, in some cases, there are portions of the code licensed from someone else, but to the customer, it looks the same. The company owns the code. The licenses and purchase agreements surrounding the code all reflect this basic structure. Open source projects, however, are owned by their communities, or more precisely, by their contributors. In a typical open source project, each contributor maintains copyright to the code that he or she contributes to the project. By agreeing to share those contributions, the coder in turn receives the benefit of the code shared by everybody else in the project. Open source licenses provide the legal structure by which the contributors agree to share and cooperate in the development of the code. Some open source licenses allow almost any use of the code, including the use of the open source components and proprietary applications. Other reciprocal open source licenses like the GNU GPL, which is the best known, mandate code sharing and continued open licensing of the open source components and any derivatives thereof. So you should think about open source conceptually as a legal construct for cooperation and trade in intellectual property. The difference between traditional software licensing is that you pay for traditional software licenses with money, whereas you pay for open source licenses with time or with code. Now, Ricardo's model, I'm going to get into the economic theory for just a second. A lot of people know the theory of comparative advantage from David Ricardo. Ricardo's model of comparative advantage demonstrates that when two people that have different strengths trade with each other, both are better off. By crystallizing ideas down into tradable commodities, programmers turn ideas into things that they can actually trade, that you can engage with each other in an economic fashion. Trading code naturally leads to a market where people who participate receive and have different strengths in different types of code. People who participate in this open source market receive the gains from trade predicted by Ricardo's model. In short, Ricardo showed how people who trade get more goods or more quality for less money. And that is what happens, and that is the primary driver for open source generally. Though people who use open source get more code or more quality for less money. So if the economic driver for open source is the gains from trade, but we still need to be careful because people, especially lawyers, frequently have that money shredder in the back of their mind. And the reason why for this is clear, because licensing IP can be a trip down a one-way street. It is relatively easy to loosen licensing later. It is hard to take permissively licensed IP and tighten the licensing back up into a proprietary model. Thus, if you don't know what's valuable, it seems like the best course of action is to keep it all proprietary. If it turns out later that some piece of IP can be permissively licensed, well, of course, that decision can be made later. The flaw with this analysis is that it assumes that all IP is equally valuable. If this represents all the business value that you deliver to your customer, turns out that not all of it is equally valuable. In fact, there's a lot of you know this idea of the 80-20 rule, that 20% of the value, whether it's customers, whether it's code, whether it's anything, 80% of the value comes from just 20% of the customers or 20% of the code or some of those things. When we're talking about how to engage with open source and the ways in which we need to do that, we need to be thinking about how we apply the various rules to the various types of IP that we've got. And we really want to actually make sure that we keep this ride this line between what is highly valuable in terms of being differentiating and what is supporting value. So let's get back to this idea of all IP being of equal value. We know that not all IP is equally valuable. When we present things, when we present patent portfolios, we pick out particular pieces of particular patents to show. I sometimes call these the pony patents. They're the ones that you bring out to show to try and convince someone of the value of the entire portfolio. Similarly, in software or in an application or even in a business, we bring out certain attributes in order to identify the things that we say are of the highest value. The problem is that with regard to intellectual property, we don't usually act like this is true. We set up default rules that treat all intellectual property identically. We collect it, we register it, and we hold onto it as tightly as possible. The problem is that with this approach is that most IP is not actively licensed. In fact, most of the IP that we create is not even actively used. It just sits there waiting for a possible future in which its value has been discovered and it can be used to drive proprietary advantage. The somewhat counterintuitive result is that optimizing for high commercial value IP that you want to restrictively license can reduce the total licensed value of your IP portfolio because it ends up discouraging the use of most of the IP in your portfolio.